Spokane, Washington State, August the 1st, 1998. On a notorious downtown strip known as the Track, a 46-year-old male picked up a sex worker called Christine. The woman did not know it yet, but the man at the wheel was a serial killer.
He pretended to be exactly what he wasn't. The all-American hero, family man, was actually a sex addict who killed prostitutes for pleasure.
After having sex with her, the killer pulled out his 25 caliber handgun and shot the woman in the head.
She later found bullet fragments in her head.
She had this incredible rush with death and miraculously had escaped with only a bullet wound.
Christine was the only one that survived an attack by Robert Lee Yates Jr. For more than 20 years, Yates preyed on vulnerable young women in and around the Pacific Northwest. Typically, once someone got into his car, their fate was sealed.
Yates simply discarded them as if they were trash that he'd thrown out of his vehicle, and then he'd get rid of them after he'd had his fun.
When this all-American family man was finally caught, he was convicted of killing 14 young women and one man. However, it's suspected he may have murdered many more. That makes Robert Lee Yates Jr. one of the world's most evil killers. Spokane, Washington. For more than 20 years, between 1975 and 1998, a serial killer was on the loose across America's Pacific Northwest. 50-year-old war hero Robert Lee Yates Jr. shocked the world when he was found guilty of mercilessly killing 14 women and one man.
He didn't look like a monster. He looked like an average Joe. And he was a father of five. He lived in a middle-class neighborhood. He was seen as respectable. He was a decorated pilot in the U.S. Army National Guard.
He has several tours in Germany. He becomes chief warrant officer. In every respect, an all-American hero. The sort of chap that you hang bunting out for when he returns home.
But for more than 20 years, Robert Lee Yates led a double life. At night, he was a cold-blooded serial killer, preying on vulnerable young women, mostly in the city of Spokane. Local journalist Bill Morlin covered the story of the murders.
The common ingredient in these deaths were the women had been picked up on an area in Spokane called East Sprague. It's an area east of the downtown area, and sometimes called the Track. The women would be picked up, and he apparently would engage in sexual activities. In some instances, he engaged in drug usage with these women, and then would shoot them, usually in the head. Most of the murders were committed by a 25 caliber handgun. Their bodies would be found many times in drainage ditches or in semi-wooded areas outside of town.
Special Agent Norm Brown is a seasoned investigator. In 1998, he supervised the task force assigned to track down the killer.
This one stands out in that it involved the deaths of so many innocent people. It was very challenging to find this person. The Spokane community was on edge during this investigation. A number of people thought that the investigators weren't doing enough to catch the killer at the time because the victims were prostitutes. Nothing could be farther from the truth. The victims were humans, and they didn't deserve to die, so we were bound and determined to find him.
At the start of the investigation, Yates was not a suspect.
He wasn't on our radar. There was nothing that pointed us in his direction as being the serial killer.
This killer's story begins in 1952. On May the 27th, Robert Lee Yates Jr. was born in Spokane and was raised in the small town of Oak Harbor, Washington.
Robert Lee Yates's father worked on a local naval base. He was a blue-collar worker. He had a very close relationship with his father. I think he idolized him. And his father was a coach for a little league baseball team.
Yates's time at school was very normal.
Robert Lee Yates Jr. played baseball at school, but he wasn't the star on the team. He was good at his schoolwork, but he wasn't the smart person in the class. He was just average. So there was nothing that stood out. There was nothing that said that this family would be the family that would produce a serial killer.
To the outside world, the Yateses were a happy, contented, all-American family.
In many ways, Yates's relationship with his father was completely normal. Usually it's thought that even one positive role model is sufficient to stop people from becoming seriously psychiatrically disturbed, and yet it didn't do anything here. We have to ask ourselves the question, why?
When investigators dug into Yates' family history, they discovered something shocking.
We learned that his grandmother killed his grandfather, and there was some violence in the family, obviously.
His grandmother didn't just kill his grandfather, but she killed him in an especially gruesome way. She took an axe to him, actually, and then was committed to a mental institution. And that becomes, I suspect, an intergenerational message, which is women are very dangerous. They have what you want, but they're very dangerous people.
While there was a violent history in the family, Yates himself allegedly suffered some trauma when he was just 6 years old.
We often find in serial killers that that violence is actually rooted in shame. That shame is often something that has happened during the childhood, something that the child felt they had no control over, but something that they felt judged by, something that made them feel less worthy. Robert Lee Yates was sexually assaulted by another child who was a neighbor.
But Yates kept the assault a secret. The incident was never reported to police. After graduating high school, Yates met his first wife. In 1972, aged 20, Yates and his wife moved to the small town of Walla Walla in Washington State, where they enrolled in college. There he spent his free time alone in the woods, hunting, hiking, and fishing.
The parents of his wife, years later, say actually he was quite a loner. We never really got to know him. Even though he was married to their daughter, he was somebody who was quite insular. And it's that constant theme of invisibility.
Yates's marriage to his first wife ended in divorce just 18 months later. However, he had already begun a new relationship with another woman. In December that year, Yates got a job at the Washington State Penitentiary, and the first of their five children was born. In July 1976, they were married.
He works as a prison officer, and this is a job that's about the enforcement of rules and regulations. It's about status, and it's about power, and it's about authority. And this also coincides with his first murder.
On July the 13th, 1975, a 23-year-old Yates was practicing shooting targets just outside town near Mill Creek when he came across two students. Lifelong friends Susan, age 22, and Patrick, age 21, were having a picnic.
This was an area that he knew quite well. It was out in the middle of nowhere, and he was fairly confident that he wasn't going to be disturbed. And it wouldn't surprise me if he'd been fantasizing about this for quite some time. And he comes across two college graduates, and he decides that he's going to kill them. And that's what he does. He literally shoots them in cold blood.
A rage burst out. He acted entirely instinctively and shot them both. It is unimaginable. Why would you do that? There is something profoundly out of kilter in Yates's personality.
For Yates, simply murdering the young friends was not enough.
He placed the body of Susan's on top of that of Patrick. And Susan's body, he'd removed a lot of her clothing. So this is really humiliating. This is really demeaning.
Yates left the bodies by the side of the creek and covered them with a pile of rubbish, a sleeping bag, and an old tire.
Yates essentially assassinates them. And what his motivation was is, I mean, it's anyone's guess. Did he think that these people were being sinful? Did it go against his religious upbringing? I'm only speculating. There's no way of knowing. He's never talked about what motivated him to kill that young couple.
This would have been an escalation of behavior rather than a switch being flipped. People don't just decide to kill overnight. They don't turn into murderers one day, having been completely normal the previous day. I think that he was probably stalking people. He was probably fantasizing about harming others.
Walla Walla, Washington, 1977. 2 years after murdering two students at Mill Creek, the killer, 25-year-old Robert Lee Yates Jr., joined the Army. In October, he decided to become a pilot. But during his 18 years of service, he could not contain his murderous urges.
There was one interesting incident when he was serving in Somalia. He allegedly shot a pig from the helicopter. And that wouldn't have been an easy thing to achieve in a moving airborne vehicle. It's something that he did that he didn't have to do. He wanted to prove to himself that he had hit a target from that far away.
Wherever Warrant Officer Yates was stationed, trouble seemed to follow.
Women in that area near where he'd been stationed, many of them prostitutes, suddenly ended up dead.
But without conclusive evidence, Yates was never tied to these mysterious murders.
Apparently, because of the lapse of time and because of technology issues, there was no DNA saved from some of those victims.
On April the 1st, 1996, the father of five, 44-year-old Yates, made a surprising decision. After nearly two decades of distinguished service, he resigned his position.
He pulls out and suddenly returns to Spokane. He only had to serve a further 18 months before he would have got a full military pension. Now, why would a man with five children and a wife suddenly decide to leave the army? I think the answer lies in another killing.
In August 1995, Dale County, Alabama. 8 months before Yates' resignation, a 19-year-old transvestite prostitute was shot in the face by an unknown killer. The body was found dumped on the roadside bordering Fort Rucker, an Army aviation base where Yates had been stationed at the time for training. A culprit was never found, but some continue to speculate.
I think that unknown killer was Robert Lee Yates, Jr. And I think that's why he left the army suddenly. That I feel that he was appalled. Here is a woman who is actually a man. I think Yates flipped. And I think that's why he suddenly snatched his wife and family out of a very good army career, which was about to see him get a substantial and generous pension and take them back to Spokane out of the blue.
And this is a real pivotal moment, I think, in his life, because he's somebody who operates quite well when there are boundaries around him. But now those boundaries are gone, I think we're going to see some changes.
Though it's never been proven, he's suspected of committing two other murders between 1995 and 1996 in Washington state. And in the following year, Yates picked up the pace.
He was intent on killing and intent on killing prostitutes. He would target prostitutes, perhaps because they were easy, perhaps because no one would miss them.
In 1997, Yates joined the Army National Guard, hoping to become a helicopter pilot.
We have him entering yet another career that involves him enforcing the law. So this is something that enables him to continue having that power and that control and that status.
But Yates's flying career was quickly put on hold as his medical results were being processed.
He's grounded. He's not allowed to fly his helicopter. Now, this is a pivotal moment for me because somebody else has taken control. Somebody else has made that decision. He's not the one that's in the driving seat anymore.
Despite not initially being able to fly, he remains in the National Guard. But with a large family to support, he takes on a menial job at a manufacturing plant in Spokane. And all the while, Yates continued to kill.
I think the murders that he committed were an attempt to get back control. I think there were things happening in his life that he felt were out of his control, and he wanted to feel powerful again.
His new hunting ground was the seedy strip in downtown Spokane, known as the Track.
Prostitutes to Yates were easy targets in that they would get into his vehicle without any questions asked. They would just decide what money was going to be exchanged for services. And the prostitutes were very vulnerable because most of them were drug addicts, and they'd sell themselves for money and use it to buy drugs.
Robert Lee Yates was very much a regular face on the sex workers' scene in this part of town at the time. So he wouldn't just pick up women to have sex with, he would do drugs with them. He became part of their community. And I think he would be trusted by them. He was somebody that they knew.
In the summer of 1997, Yates picked up 20-year-old Heather from the downtown Track to have sex with her.
But I suspect that the victims may not have known even the second before they died that this was going to be a killing. Because I suspect their interaction went down much as an interaction with a prostitute goes down. And then when he was done, he draws his gun and he shoots.
Yates shot Heather in the head with a .22 caliber handgun.
Literally, there's just a second that the victim becomes aware that something's amiss, and after that, the victim is dead.
After Yates murdered Heather, he dumped her body on the side of the road.
Well, he was brazen in his thought as far as dumping the bodies.
In August that year, Yates was back on the Track looking for easy prey. He picked up 16-year-old Jennifer. Like the young woman before her, her fate was a foregone conclusion.
Unlike many serial killers, the way that Yates kills is instrumental. He has sex with his victims, and then he pulls out a gun and he shoots them. They die virtually instantaneously at the hand of somebody who knows how to use weapons effectively. He's not trying to torture. He's not trying to terrorize. He's simply eliminating the witness.
He watches as the life literally drains from them. And this is an individual who's is not going to stop because his offending is getting worse. It's becoming more sadistic.
Once dead, Yates prepared to move Jennifer's body, a ritual he would repeat time and time again.
After shooting them in the heads, he put bags over their head largely to keep his car clean. I mean, he didn't want the blood dripping out and would put plastic bags over their heads to keep the mess off his car.
10 days later, local farmers found Jennifer's badly decomposed body. It had been dumped in brush northeast of Spokane.
This site where Jennifer was found, it was next to a working farm near to an alfalfa field. So he's not really seeming too bothered about covering up. It seems that he just wants to get away at this point in time.
That same day, officers made another grim discovery, another of his victims.
Heather is found in a field in a parking lot off the strip in East Spokane.
Robert Yates would typically bury them slightly or partially. Other times he would cover them with debris. Many of them were found nude or semi-nude. They were discarded like trash along the road.
And that's exactly how he saw these women. He saw them as disposable. He saw them for just his own pleasure, and then he'd get rid of them after he'd had his fun.
But this time, these Spokane-based detectives had a vital lead.
We received a tip that one of the victims, Jennifer Joseph, was last seen getting into a white Corvette.
On the 24th of September, 1997, a local police officer patrolling the Track pulled Yates for speeding.
And a police officer actually had stopped him to fill out a report, but in the vehicle description, instead of writing down Corvette, the officer wrote down CAM, apparently referring to a Camaro.
The police officer actually wrote down that he was in a different kind of car, and that meant that they missed Robert Lee Yates.
Later that autumn, Yates picked up Darla, a 28-year-old sex worker, on the Track.
He would pick up these women, he would shoot them in the head, and then he would bury their bodies. So this was very cold. This was very kind of executioner style.
Darla's body was found on November the 5th, 1997, 10 miles south of downtown Spokane on Hangman Valley Road.
I visited the recovery site of Darla, and she was dumped in some bushes by some trees and rolled down a hill, but not very far off the Hangman Valley Road, where I often rode my bicycle for exercise. When I ride by there, I always think of her, and my heart goes out to her and her family, because she was treated like trash after she was killed.
In December that year, Yates's killing spree spread some 300 miles east to Tacoma, an area he's familiar with.
As a pilot with the Washington Army National Guard, he was based here in Spokane, but on certain weekends he would travel to the other side of the state, to near Tacoma, Washington, where he would do military weekend drills.
On December the 6th, Yates chose his next victim. He picked up 34-year-old sex worker Melinda.
Robert Lee Yates didn't just target an area that he was familiar with. He would be carrying out his crimes in areas where he just happened to find himself. He was in Tacoma on one particular date, and this coincided with the murder of Melinda.
Melinda's body was found the following day, dumped in wasteland by a railroad track.
I think at this point, he's becoming quite arrogant. He's not gotten caught so far, so he's pushing the boundaries a little bit. And you see this happen with quite a lot of serial killers. They have this kind of proneness to boredom, this need for stimulation, this need to kind of mix things up a bit. And I think that's what he's doing when he's killing outside of the area he knows.
By the end of 1997, the 45-year-old serial killer had shot and murdered at least 12 innocent people. Most were vulnerable young women.
I think the fact that sex workers in this area were still going out and still working, even though they knew that their friends and their acquaintances were being killed by the serial killer, just shows what desperate circumstances these women live in. They have to go out, they have to work for money, often to feed drug habits.
On December the 22nd, 1997, police set up a special task force in Spokane to catch the serial killer terrorizing America's Pacific Northwest. But the killings that holiday season continued, unabated.
Robert E. Yates murders Sonny during the Christmas period of 1997, where most people are celebrating the festivities with their families. This really does show me that serial killers don't take time out. They don't stop for the holidays. They want to keep killing because they enjoy it, because it gives them power and it gives them control.
A day after Christmas, detectives discovered the lifeless bodies of two more women. Both were found within the Spokane city limits.
Laurel and Sean, their bodies were found at the same time. Laurel was shot in the head and discarded like a piece of rubbish. Sean was another one of Robert Lee Yates's victims, and I think he was getting a little bit arrogant. He was getting a little bit sloppy at the time of her killing. So after he killed her, he placed the plastic bag over her head, and there was a print that was found on that bag. And that turned out to be his print. So as he's becoming more bold, as he's becoming more confident, he's starting to make mistakes.
Fear amongst the general public escalated as the murders across the Pacific Northwest continued.
By the end of the 90s, there were like a dozen or so of these prostitutes who had turned up dead, and there was no killer in custody. And by then, everyone was saying, we have a serial killer in our midst, and something needs to be done about it.
I think the impact of his crimes on the community were incredibly significant, because here's this guy who appears to be completely regular, completely average, completely invisible, to be honest, somebody who didn't really stand out, and yet he was able to wreak such havoc across the community.
By January 1998, the number of unsolved murder cases in Spokane had drastically risen. The FBI was called in to assist the Spokane Task Force in catching the killer.
Now, the Spokane Serial Killer Task Force had hundreds of leads to begin with, turned out to be thousands of leads. Some of those leads were interstate, in fact, even in other countries. So they asked the FBI to get involved.
Special Agent Norm Brown was the FBI's liaison officer who coordinated efforts and resources with the Spokane Serial Killer Task Force.
It's difficult to work these type of cases because we know women are being killed the longer we can't find the serial killer. So we're anxious to find the killer. So that works on the head and the hearts of the investigators. I spent about 100 hours plus following leads and helping the task force. It was challenging. We'd try to think why the killer would pick this site to dump the bodies. Generally, they're found in fields or in wooded areas, but not always. A couple of the bodies were found within the city limits.
On January the 19th, 1998, the task force sponsored a candlelit vigil to memorialize the many women who'd been murdered on the streets of Spokane, in the hope it would lead to more information about the killer.
There was a lot of community outrage. A lot of people thought that the law enforcement authorities weren't giving us enough attention because of who these victims were. There were candlelight vigils, and of course, there were undercover police there watching to see who would show up.
But there were no further leads. 4 months later, Yates sold his white Corvette, a car he'd been stopped in for speeding in on the track by police the previous year. He began prowling his favorite hunting ground in a big black van.
Robert Lee Yates really is the embodiment of the arrogant, narcissistic serial killer who really does know his patch, that he would go up and down, and he set up his vehicle as a mobile sex unit. So this is a guy who's very confident in what he's doing. He's hiding in plain sight. He's almost taunting the police, essentially, and saying, hey, everybody, look at me, look what I'm up to, and none of you have caught me yet.
In May 1998, Yates picked up 43-year-old Melody downtown. Like his previous victims, he followed the same deadly routine. After he'd had sex with her, he killed her. Melody was reported missing by her family shortly after she disappeared. Even with support from the FBI, the task force were unable to locate her body.
Melody had been missing for several days, weeks, and then months. She was last seen living with her sister in Minnesota, or that she was working the streets in Tennessee, or selling drugs in California. None of these leads panned out. It's like she just dropped off the face of the earth.
Shortly after Melody's murder, the overconfident killer began to make a series of mistakes. In July that year, Yates picked up 47-year-old Mikkelin downtown. This time, Yates buried her body close to home, a block from the manufacturing company in Spokane where he worked.
The body of Micheline was actually found near Robert Lee Yates' place of work, and I think this shows how arrogant and how incredibly confident he was becoming in his killing. Very often, serial killers will keep a clear separation between their work life and their home life and their killing, but it's starting to merge into one.
Police questioned a number of employees who worked at the manufacturing company, including Yates. But with no evidence to link him to the murder, no further action was taken.
And he's actually interviewed in relation to the discovery of this body. And part of me thinks he probably quite enjoyed that. He probably quite enjoyed the police asking him questions, knowing that he knew all along who was responsible.
Like many serial killers, he starts slow and begins to escalate, and the frequency of the killing and the amount of the killing gets more and more. And there's something else that becomes more and more over time. He makes less and less efforts to hide the bodies after a while.
But Yates' luck was about to run out. On August the 1st, 1998, Yates picked up another sex worker, Christine Smith, in downtown Spokane.
Christine Smith got inside the van of Robert Yates, attempted to perform oral sex on him, and during that process, she felt a sharp blow to her head. And she immediately got out, ran away.
It was like a glancing blow, and she didn't even realize initially that she'd been shot. It was a superficial wound near her ear, as I recall.
Christine Smith's case really is absolutely astounding. She thought she'd just been stabbed. She managed to escape the car and go and get help from people. This is a witness who has survived. This is a witness who can identify him. And it's only a matter of time before the police catch up with him.
Despite Christine's escape, Yates was unable to contain the urge to kill. In September, he was on the hunt again. Sex worker Connie was his next victim. Her body was found weeks later by a search and rescue dog down an embankment in Pierce County, Tacoma.
These women turning up dead, and most of them were prostitutes. And it was the common theme with these victims. And they were difficult to find background information about them. And they were turning up dead one at a time. And many of these cases would result in just, you know, a short little news item on the evening news or in the newspaper.
The following month, Yates went on the prowl to his favorite hunting ground, the track. On November the 10th, 1998, he picked up sex worker Jennifer. But before Yates could make his move, they were pulled over and his details were taken down.
And a police officer actually had stopped him and filled out a police report about suspicious activity. He had a young woman in the car with him, and there was no criminal conduct that he could be arrested on the spot for. And the police officer filled out a report.
The police encounter saved Jennifer's life. Yates immediately dropped her off just a few blocks away. Spokane, Washington, 1999. After almost 30 years, Robert Lee Yates Jr., the serial killer responsible for at least 13 murders, is still on the loose. Following two police interviews the previous year, detectives discovered that Yates had once owned a white Corvette, a car linked to one of the victims found in 1997.
There was a witness who saw Jennifer Joseph getting into a white Corvette on that summer evening that she disappeared. And a white Corvette is quite a distinctive vehicle. It's one that you're not going to mistake for something else. And this is something that's going to be really important in the conviction of Robert Lee Yates.
On September the 15th, 1999, 47-year-old Yates was brought in for questioning.
Robert Lee Yates is called in by the police and he can't account for his whereabouts on a couple of the key dates. One of the things that really does trip him up is the police are presenting their evidence to him and they say about a white Camaro being seen. And he corrects them, he goes, oh no, it's not a Camaro, it's a Corvette.
Yates' admission was a breakthrough, but it wasn't enough to arrest him. Police needed more evidence to link him to the Washington murders. Yates was released the same day. The task force issued a search warrant and tracked down the new owner of the 1977 white Corvette that Yates had sold.
They pulled registrations for every white Corvette in Idaho and Washington in this region and winnowed that down and ultimately located the Corvette that Robert Yates had once owned.
The task force recovered Yates's white Corvette and submitted it to forensic examination.
The investigators were able to recover evidence that linked Yates to the killing of one of the prostitutes.
One of the victims, Jennifer Joseph, had carpet fibers on her body. They processed that car and found the same kind of carpet threads that matched Jennifer.
Jennifer Joseph had been murdered 2 years earlier, and her body was found in an alfalfa field northeast of Spokane.
The detectives meticulously took the Corvette apart, and in that process, they found a small button that matched the kind of button that was on the clothing worn by Jennifer Joseph. They then knew that Jennifer Joseph had been in that vehicle prior to her death.
Investigators also found a number of bloodstains. When tested, they revealed DNA belonging to Jennifer.
They knew that her murder had been in that vehicle before she'd been dumped in a field northwest of Spokane.
All of the evidence is starting to match up, and it leads them right back to Robert Lee Yates.
The task force put in a warrant for Yates's arrest.
By the time the detectives get a warrant for his arrest, they're 100% certain they've got the right man.
On April the 17th of 2000, the task force put Yates under 24-hour surveillance.
The police had staked out the family home, made sure that he was there, and after he left for work at 6 o'clock the following morning, they moved in and they arrested him.
The same day, detectives searched Yates's house for further evidence. Immediately after his arrest, a sample of Yates's DNA was taken and compared with samples collected from a number of murder victims found between 1996 and 1998.
It was tested that day and came back late that afternoon. I recall that we were at the Yates home conducting a search when we got word that the DNA matched Robert Yates. At least 8 of the victims had the same DNA found on them, so we knew we were dealing with a serial killer. All investigators were very happy. We were actually elated.
The day after Yates was apprehended, a newspaper report was released detailing his arrest. Upon seeing it, former sex worker Christine Smith instantly recognized Yates as being the man who shot her in the back of his van in August of 1998. At the time of the incident, she thought she'd been stabbed and had reported it to police.
It wasn't until a couple of years later, when she was involved in a car wreck, that she went to the hospital and they discovered shrapnel in her head. And then she realizes that she's actually been shot. She hasn't been stabbed. Somebody has held a gun to her head and pulled the trigger. And not only that, this person who's done this is Robert Lee Yates, and she realizes I could have been one of his victims.
Christine's evidence helped connect the final pieces of the puzzle.
Her coming forward was very crucial to the task force. She came forward, provided the information to law enforcement, and she was a living victim, if you will. It's a living person that could testify against Robert Yates.
A month later, in May of 2000, investigators meticulously searched Yates's black van. They discovered blood pertaining to 2 other victims, 3 bullet holes, and spent bullets and bullet debris containing Christine's DNA.
When the task force finally got to her, they had the bullet fragment surgically removed, and it ballistically matched up to the same weapon that was used in some of these other killings.
While searching Yates's property, investigators discovered the murder weapons.
He used handguns. Some of the victims may also have been killed with a .22, but most of the murders were committed by a .25 caliber handgun.
The task force now had enough evidence to charge him with a total of 13 murders and the attempted murder of Christine Smith. In October of 2000, at the Spokane Superior Court, Yates faced his charges. In front of a packed room, the serial killer took to the stand and made a shock plea.
Yates, to the surprise of many, goes to court and pleads guilty to 13 counts of murder and 1 count of attempted murder.
The callous killer avoided going to trial by pleading guilty to the murders.
Robert Lee Yates struck a plea bargain. He confessed to 13 murders and actually got life in prison without the possibility of parole.
As part of the deal, Yates revealed a horrible secret.
Robert Yates agreed to disclose the location of Melanie. None of the investigators knew where she was, and the family didn't know where she was either. So he agreed to lead us to her body.
Using Yates's hand-drawn map, the task force excavated an area to the east side of the killer's home.
Her body was located in Robert Yates's yard. Buried. It was his trophy, so to speak. It was pretty horrendous. When the investigators were conducting the search inside the house, no one ever dreamt that she would be buried right outside his bedroom. We were surprised and dejected to know that he would do such a thing.
This says he wants to be able to watch over the body of this victim, to have control over this crime scene.
There's obviously some sadistic kind of a thrill associated with that. I mean, this body was buried at his family home, right outside the bedroom where he and his wife slept.
Yates' deal with the police saved his life.
That was a strong selling point, that he would give up the location of her body and he would get a life sentence as opposed to the death penalty. The investigators, including myself, believed that he should get a death sentence. If the death sentence doesn't apply to him, who does it apply to? He ended up getting 408 years for the murders.
In 2002, prosecutors in Pierce County charged Yates with two additional murders, that of Melinda in 1997 and of Connie in 1998. Yates murdered both women in Pierce County, Washington.
In 2002, he was convicted of further murders, and for those murders, he actually received the death penalty.
In October of 2002, Yates was sentenced to death by lethal injection, but Washington State has now abolished capital punishment. As a result, Yates is now serving life in prison without the possibility of parole in Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla. In an ironic twist of fate, he's now housed in the same facility that he once served in as a prison guard 25 years earlier. A fitting end for the monstrous murderer.
That is the most shocking part of this. He was just the guy that everybody has living next door to them. He wasn't this three-eyed monster or some sexual psychopath or registered sex offender. I mean, he was a father. He lived in a modest, upscale part of town. He'd been in the military. Just about as ordinary as you could possibly get.
And he didn't look like a monster either. He looked like an average Joe. This averageness is something that actually played to his advantage as a serial killer.
Convicted of 15 cold-blooded murders, Spokane's mass murderer is suspected of taking many more innocent lives. And that makes Robert Lee Yates Jr. one of the world's most evil killers.